Time for what?
Time for what?
Experience in college.
Time for reinforcement.
Time for liftoff!
Where nothing is impossible unless you think it is impossible.
College scholarship.
Yes.
Boom.
College ran by real fast.
You hung in with the best college.
Touchdown! First time for everything.
Well, what are you waiting for?
What are you waiting for?
Let's do this thing.
Genius, let's do this thing!
So welcome, everyone, to the show. We have a special guest. Happy and proud to say that I am a colleague of Jana Galeata, who has a vast training in various different areas, from liberal studies, emphasizing in education. She has not one but two credentials as a learning specialist, from mild to moderate to also moderate to severe, and she'll tell us a little bit more about that. And also, she has a master's degree. Yes, she does not know how to stop because she wants to give so much to students, special education, as well as also has gotten done some work in educational therapy. Jana, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So why don't we start off with what got you interested in this field? I mean, you really dug deep into this profession. What got you into this world of helping students who have, as some people say, learning disabilities? I've heard other students call superpowers as well, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so interestingly enough, I actually started out as a nursing major in college, but I always loved education. I did all my service hours in education when I was a student at St. Ignatius, and ended up just switching my major in college because I knew that this was my calling. And my mother actually is a special educator, so I spent a lot of time obviously hearing about what she was doing and seeing her work with students, and I just really, really appreciated that. And I myself am diagnosed with ADHD, and I know how critical this kind of support is to student success.
Now, you're right, because there's so many different learning styles out there. And so if I'm a parent or guardian or even a student, how do I figure out that I should maybe check out to see if I have a learning style that's not mainstream that may need some extra support?
I'm a firm believer in the old adage, knowledge is power. So anytime anyone has any questions about how they learn, why they do things a certain way, if they're struggling or hitting a roadblock, I always recommend reaching out to a professional to get more advice and more insight on what is going on, how they learn, and what they might need to succeed.
Yeah, and so a lot of times, you know, through the years, I'll hear students say, well, I'm just bad in math, right? Or mm-hmm. I'm just a slow reader. But there's a lot more behind that, right? I think those are just easy things that people say, like, oh, I'm lazy or I can't sit still. So a lot of times kids know something's not right, but it's sometimes the adults who tend to kind of like, no, everything's fine. Everything's fine because, you know, I'm definitely from that older generation where there's a negative stigma if you have a different learning style.
Yes, yes. And that definitely has improved quite a bit since I got into the field of education about 10 years ago, but it still exists. And, you know, I work with teenagers right now, and every teenager just wants to fit in. They don't want to be judged, and they don't want to be different for any reason. So sometimes, actually, the stigma these days can fall more on the students. The students are feeling more pressured to fit in than the parents. So it kind of goes both ways. And so it does involve, the process does involve breaking that down just a little bit and helping kids to understand that individuality, is just the way our world works, and it's no different for education.
Yeah, so, and I think that's a key thing is just like you said before, is asking those questions, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I want to also add that, you know, boy, I think in the last century, yes, that's how long I've been doing this for. You know, there was a lawsuit at the UC Berkeley where, because historically the UC system used to ask, do you have a learning disability or not? Mm-hmm. And people assumed students were being discriminated. And the admissions folks that I worked with said, you know, it's so sad that we won't know who has a learning disability or not because they usually don't volunteer this information. end quote, we don't know who are going to be, who are the super strong students, because if you know how to rise above an education system that tends to, you know, speaking on the national level, is very mainstream for one type of learner, the colleges can't see, you know, those hidden superheroes that are out there. So how do you work with students? Because, you know, you work in a learning center that's open to all students, right?
You know, to
support everyone. So you and your colleagues in the learning center must see some kids who hit some roadblocks over and over. How's the best way? Because you're right on the money, right? The kids don't want to seem like they put these negative labels, really not realizing that they've been super strong despite it all.
Yes, yes. And I try to honestly normalize struggle and hardship, because we all experience it in our lives. And high school is 4 years long, and it's not a reasonable expectation to think that the whole thing is going to be rosy and smooth sailing, right? So kids are going to struggle at certain points in their high school career. So I don't like to limit our services to just students who have diagnosed learning differences. We open it up to everybody. And especially now during COVID, we've got kids who are really struggling with aspects of distance learning, so they're getting support from us. And then we still kind of keep up with our students who have learning differences to make sure that they're getting what they need as well. So it's definitely multifunctional in here, and I really like having sort of a flexible atmosphere so that kids can come in with anything and we will welcome them. And if we can help them, great. And if not, we'll point them in the right direction so that nobody feels like they have to struggle or go through hardships alone. Even though they're inevitable, you know, in our lifetime, it doesn't mean that we have to go through them alone, right?
Oh, no. Nobody wants to be alone. Yeah,
right.
Even the people who say I'm loners don't really want to be alone. Let's just be honest.
And that's what's funny, is because you see loners, but usually they travel in groups. So
yes.
It's like it's a group of loners, so they're not really loners.
Exactly, exactly. Now, your model is not something that's traditionally used in many different places. Have you seen in recently that has been changing in variety of educational systems, right? Because, you know, the college system, right? And I'm just going to focus on what I'm more familiar with. Like certain public schools they have a center for a learning disability, but only people with learning disability could access those services. Do you see there's a change of that model, or you still think it's still business as usual?
No, I think depending on the place, there is a change in that model. I want to say it was about 2 decades ago, there was a new special ed system that came out called Response to Intervention. And this was basically a solution to the whole wait to fail phenomenon. Basically, people were upset saying that, you know, we have to wait until my kid is failing in order for the district to test my child, right? And parents obviously didn't like that, because their kid has to dig themselves a huge emotional and educational hole before the district will agree to dig them out. So Response to Intervention basically means if a student is struggling, they have what's called an RTI specialist who moves in and starts applying interventions for these students. The interventions are on different levels. So you start applying Tier 1 intervention. If that doesn't work, you move up to Tier 2. And then if that doesn't work, you move up to Tier 3. And if that doesn't work, then you get the student tested. So that way these kids are able to get support with what they need without having to be tested and identified. Doesn't mean they still can't get that, but it just means that we don't have to wait for them to get into this huge hole before they get tested. And that's kind of what I like to do here. A lot of schools will have the model, especially private schools, where if a parent comes and says their student is really struggling, the school says we need to have documentation of a diagnosis, right? And that can be really limiting on a lot of families for many reasons, one of the biggest being cost, right? So instead, I like to bring them in, find out what's going on, and see if we can apply some interventions first and see how that works before, you know, bringing testing into the picture.
No, and I think that's really important, right? Because there may just be a struggle, right? You know, like maybe something was only taught a certain way, and you just need a different way of looking at it. It may not be, you know, a disability on there. And I think that's really important. And I love that there is this new model, because I, you know, for someone who's been, you know, doing this for so long, you talk about the emotional struggle. Like, I have to fail in order for me to succeed. Like, you know, failures could be a learning block, but it's struggle when you're trying to get into that high school or that college as well. And you know, and I like you said, like, you know, talk to, you know, the teachers, the counselors, go to wherever learning support. I know, like, here in the city, and you may know other resources too, like support for families with disabilities. There's a lot of resources that are free for families. Are there other ones that, you know, for people who are just kind of thinking about it so they don't feel alone, that they should look at?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. I do think that the resources that you look for depend a lot on what questions you're trying to have answered and what you are trying to get support for. And I think the first place that I would start is having the parents, and you can find like little guides or pamphlets on the internet about this, but having the parents find one that can guide them through their rights. If their child is diagnosed with a disability, what their rights are and what they can get from the school district at no cost. The reason is because the more you advocate for your child and the more you ask for things, the more your child's going to get. It's just kind of how it works. So I recommend starting there. And for getting kids tested, there are so many amazing practitioners in San Francisco. And actually, one of the benefits from COVID, if there is one, is that a lot of these psychologists are getting their practices set up to test kids virtually. So now you can even find a practitioner somewhere else in the state who can still provide reliable and accurate testing for your child. And you may be able to find a professional who charges a cheaper fee, or a practitioner who works on a sliding scale or does payment plans, takes insurance. That's another way to do it. So I always tell parents, look at what your rights are, advocate with the school district, talk to your pediatrician, right? Talk to everybody. Talk to your community, because that's where those little nuggets of information come from.
Oh, I know. I keep on telling everyone, keep on knocking on a door until one opens, because there is one ready for you. It's just, you just have to have that determination and love for yourself or for your child enough so to get it done. Now, you mentioned over and over again being a self-advocate. For how is someone supposed to be a self-advocate? And, you know, and these are the individuals who already know they have different learning styles. You know, sometimes I have some middle school families who apply, like, I don't want them to know they have a learning disability because they may not get accepted. To others, while they're a high schooler, right? It's a very different dynamic. To someone even applying to college, right? And continuing the support services that they may want to continue.
Yeah. So the first part of that was self-advocacy. Self-advocacy is a skill. And we expect that different kids are going to have that skill to different levels depending on their age and their ability, right? And it is a skill that can be taught to the students. So that's something that I work with my kids on. I teach it directly and explicitly, and I also always start teaching it with where the student is at in that moment. So, for example, I had a student who did not advocate for herself at all, and it wasn't that she didn't know how to. She was very articulate and able to talk to the teachers very well, but she had had some really negative experiences in the past, so she was fearful. So for that student, I would start off in a different place and use different strategies than a student who has a speech and language issue and just can't find the words to talk to the teachers, so they avoid it, right? So that's a really important thing to do. And then when the kids get to college, what I usually tell them to do when they're applying to colleges is to find the universities that they'd like to attend and then look up on their website what their support services are like. And then once they find them, they need to take notes and information on those programs and ask questions about it when they go to these schools for, you know, their on-campus tours and things like that. And make sure that they're interviewing those programs, because the student is also not just applying to a college, but that college is vying to get them to go to their school as well, right? So I think that's really empowering, to try to interview these programs and find out which one is going to support the best, and kind of go from there. And then you can kind of submit all of that documentation once you're admitted to the school. Then you go into the center and find support. That's usually how it works. Some universities do have a separate application process for their support programs, and that's okay too. So I do recommend just early on getting that information about each individual program, what's involved, what they do to support, and interviewing the people to make sure it sounds like something that would work for that student.
No, and that's so important. I can't tell you, sometimes we have so many students that come in and says, oh, I'm not going to talk about my learning disability. I'm afraid of the stigma, or they're going to not want me there. And like you said, the stigma of that's of like beginning of, you know, last century or middle of last century, you know, things have changed so much. I think if you go in a regular classroom, you see a good chunk of students with learning differences, and amen to that. We want different learners. We want different styles. That's how we get so creative. I had a student who did not talk about their learning differences and omitted that. And this person had to work so hard in all their classes, got waitlisted. And I'm like, okay. And they chose not to because of all the pressures from the outside voices of other people saying that. And I said, okay, you're on the wait list. You have nothing to lose. It's your choice because it is confidential. This is your superpower. You know, despite it all, look at it. And they went for it and they got in, you know, because you're right. And, you know, all odds against them because it's wait list. It's not easy. And this was pre-COVID-19. So I love how you said about interviewing for that school, right? It has to be a marriage that works well for everyone. And if you're not going to tell college a part of who you are and they're not going to support it, why go there?
Exactly. That's so true. And I think one of the biggest parts of my job on a long-term scale is that reducing that stigma or eliminating it altogether is really, really important to me. So I talk openly about my own ADHD. It helps me connect with the students, and I try to just create this policy of like talking about where we're at and how we learn. Of course, I would never force a kid into something they weren't ready for or force them to disclose their diagnostic information when they don't want to, but just encouraging kids to talk about the way in which they learn, how they study certain material, I use audiobooks, I work with Miss Galetta, she dictates to me and I type things out, or I dictate to her, she types it. Just talking about all these strategies that they use to normalize working outside of the box, right?
Yeah, the mask needs to be removed. So John doesn't know this, so I'm also a parent of some kids who do have learning differences. And when teachers come and contact me like, oh, thank you for telling us, or thank you for being so open, I'm like, well, why wouldn't I be? Like, we have to make sure this works, and we have to work as a team, right? So, and it's different, right? When they're, John just also doesn't know how many kids I have. So for my younger one, you're going to need to be more of that, you know, that flashlight so that they could kind of point out and say, hey, am I guiding my kid the right way? Is this working? Is it not? Whether maybe the medication working or too much work or lack of sleep. I mean, there's so many variables. And then for my older son, it's more of, okay, you need to learn to do that. Ask for the help, you know. But if you struggle, let's strategize. Let's think outside of the box. And I think I remember there was some experiences where one of my kids says, oh, because this person has a disability, they can't do this. And I'm like, no, they can't. And they blew the teacher away. Now, and this is not at SI, but there are going to be some biases. But one thing is like on the application process, or even if a student does an interview, you could blow people's minds away if, I mean, I know in the learning center, I see the kids who devote all the extra hours of work, right, of second guessing themselves. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about how you promote that healthy self-image. Because sometimes I see students who overthink about the process, like, I'm not good enough, when they're like, oh, my God, you're so great. It's okay. You know, they work so hard to overcome their learning differences and not really see all the treasures they have along the way. So how do you work that in, and how can families, and if students are listening, they could do it themselves as well?
Yeah, so one of the things that I really try to do is I try to encourage the students and the families as much as they can to provide balance to their student. So if reading is challenging for them in a normal classroom setting, yes, they may have to have a tutor, but make sure that whatever they have a strength in, they also have time for that. So a lot of parents will say to me, you know, my kid is just got an F on a test. I think I shouldn't let him go to basketball practice this week. And it's like, my perspective on that is maybe for a week, but don't pull him from something that he loves because this is hard for him, right? So if you can really help them pour their energy and their heart and soul into things that are strengths for them, that can really build them up, because too often the kids are hyper-focused on the academics that are challenging for them. They spend more time on it because they need help with that. But then that sort of becomes their reality, and they feel that that's the only thing to them is this disability and this struggle. So focusing energy elsewhere is really great. The other thing that I like to do is if the kids are struggling in a certain area, I like to try to teach it to them differently. So, for example, I've had kids come to me who say, I'm not a math brain, just as you were mentioning earlier on. I'm not a math brain. I just can't do math. So we'll talk a little bit about why that is untrue and just what we know about elasticity of the brain and brain growth. I have some books that I use. I have multiple at different levels for different age groups. And then I'll try to teach it to them in a different way. So I've done trainings with multisensory mathematics instruction that has things color-coded, and so we'll do that, and then they'll be like, oh my gosh, I can do this. I do have an ability to do math. I just needed to do it a different way. And so I want them to feel empowered that, you know, that they can say, I can learn math. I just have to learn it this way, right? And just kind of flip that script in their minds.
Oh, no. And I think that's so important. And then the nice thing is with students thinking about colleges, there's so many different methods out there, right? There's more colleges that teach by doing, right?
Yeah.
Or
there's
ones that do co-ops, or it's internship programs, right? Like, a lot of students focus on the name brand versus, well, this is what I'm really good at. So let me focus on this energy. I remember I had a student who was not going to do anything STEM, and, you know, just did, you know, did take advantage of the Learning Center, did find out this late diagnosis, and had these great talents in language and social studies and you name it, all the humanities. And I'm like, well, why don't we just focus on that? They're like, oh no, but I need to take what everyone else is taking. And I said, what did I tell you about being a cookie cutter? Right?
Yeah.
They all look
they
the
sure
same.
Don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Right?
And
like,
I do think kids put a lot of pressure on themselves to figure out what college they're going to go to, what their major is going to be, and what their career is going to be for the rest of their lives. And I just told a parent today whose daughter is struggling with this. I said to her, listen, kids these days are going to live to be at least 100 years. I said, it is unreasonable to expect a person to decide what they want to do for all of those years when they're 18 or 17 years old. That is unreasonable. So I try to unburden some of that pressure and say, I want your college experience to be one where you are living and you're learning. And your career is likely going to be in line with something you have a strength in or something you enjoy, right? There's a reason I didn't go into engineering. Because I hate math and science, right? So so I tell them, what's your favorite subject? And then we kind of explore majors from there. And I just feel like relieving some of that pressure is huge for them.
Oh, no. Like, there's so many kids who just don't, well, you know, people focus so much on the name, and they don't see so much what's out there, like data science, right? Where they are maybe kids who loves computers, you know, and data science is like what a webmaster was back in the old days. Like, what is that? You know, and it's a very up and coming. It's called Facebook, right? Like, it's how to track people. And then, you know, the reason why there's so many people in the world who come to the United States to study is because we do allow students to explore. Right. And often they don't look at all the curriculum, all the different classes. I was talking to a student one who's a current student and alum, about interdisciplinary studies. Like, you create your own major. And doesn't that make it real, right? Because, you know, you may want to be in the business world, but you want to learn some graphic design and you want to do some filmmaking, which someone in marketing will be using. I spoke to an alum who's actually older than you, and he literally was saying, you know, all this hoopla about these big name schools doesn't matter. I work for a huge hedge fund, and I work with so many people from so many different colleges.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's like, it's about who you are. And that's, you know, promoting yourself and your joy and that self-confidence. And he's actually like, you know, I was just following, you know, the hedge fund where I'm like, I want something more. So he's actually going to explore a totally different industry, you know, because he's following that passion, right? You know, so I love how you put that, and the more all of us could say there's just so much out there and take the labels and the mask away, the better. Now, I'm going to ask you to see if you have some crystal power reading powers out there. Mm-hmm. So right now there is a movement of tests optional. And anyone who works in the learning center historically before has spent hours of helping students, whether it be getting accommodations, whether about trying to find those accommodations and getting all these agreements. So what is your take regarding about test optional? And what do you think this means for those students who have learning differences?
So this is a really interesting question, because for the longest time, I have absolutely hated standardized testing as a method for deciding which of your students are going to, or your applicants are going to be successful or not. And I am glad that students are starting to eliminate that. But the test optional thing is tricky, because a lot of people are still worried that schools are going to have sort of this implicit bias or this blind judgment that they're not aware of leaning more towards kids who have the standardized tests than kids who don't, and thinking that, oh, well, why didn't they take it? What's wrong? You know? So my preference is that we don't use standardized tests at all, actually. I would prefer it if we used other measures. And I think this is just, it's more fair.
Now that, you know, as students get identified of having a disability, and they're going to be blessed with having someone like you to give them that toolkit to, you know, use their superpowers, how to learn what works and what doesn't work for them. It's important for them to understand how to continue that when they go into college. So what are the tips you have of finding those schools? Because every school, even if it's a public school, which has a common policy for everyone, it has a different feel, a taste, a blend. So what is the recommendations you give for students?
So I usually tell students first off to, you know, go on the school's website and find their program for kids with disabilities. And every school should have one. If you see a school that tells you they don't have one, I'd say that you would probably want to steer clear of that school. And then I would also want the students to know that you have rights. You have rights that are given to you by our federal government for what you can get in the way of services at a school. However, those rights do vary whether the school is receiving federal funding or if it's a public school, all of those things. So I would strongly encourage students to know their rights before going into it. And if they need help finding out, they could go to the special education teacher at their school or their learning specialist. So students at St. Ignatius would come to me, and we can kind of go over what they have a right to when they move on to college. And I think that's just the most important thing, so that they can advocate for themselves when they transition to college.
Now, I've looked around, and you probably would know than I would. Like, I could get a list of top colleges have the best food, you know, top colleges that have best support program for campus pride, et cetera. Is there a list for really, like, the top schools or colleges for a learning support programs?
With students? Yeah.
Okay, so what are some websites would you recommend?
Honestly, you can just go to Google and type that in, top universities for students with learning differences or learning disabilities. You could just type that in and see what comes up. A lot of them are going to be smaller private liberal arts schools because they tend to have more flexibility with their curriculum and the class sizes are smaller. But yeah, if you were to just Google that, you would have lists come up. And if you were to cross-reference those lists, you would see a lot of commonalities between the lists. Certain schools that are going to come up over and over again. The one thing you'd want to make sure of is that the list is not like ad-based. So it doesn't look like a list of ads for schools, right? But as long as you type that in, you should be able to find tons of options. And then I also think just word of mouth is a really good way to find out too. So if you have friends or family members who have learning differences, you could ask them if they have recommendations, because word definitely gets around about universities that have good programs. And then obviously I think kids should definitely go and tour the schools. Obviously that's harder since we're in COVID times, but touring the schools, finding who runs the program at the university, interviewing them, and making sure that you feel comfortable.
No, that's so important. And a lot of times students forget that they could go to the admissions office and just say, hey, can I get in contact with the person in charge of this department?
Then
do a student panel. They love that, especially in the smaller schools for that. Now, some parents and guardians may say, well, so what's better, public or private, right? So, right, because the public schools have these guidelines, but correct me if I'm wrong, but private schools don't have to give a certain level of support for students.
Yeah, so actually the distinguishing factor is not whether or not the school is public or private. The distinguishing factor is whether or not the school is receiving federal funding. So if the school is a private school but they receive a certain stipend every year from the federal government for teacher training programs, for example, they are getting federal funding, so they have to provide certain federal rights that are the same as the public schools, right? But if they're a private school that receives no federal funding, they do not have to follow the federal laws for kids with disabilities. So that is an important distinguishing factor. However, there are so many great private schools out there that do offer really great programs. And it's hard for me to say, give an overall statement of what is better, public or private, because, again, it really depends on the student and what they're looking for and what they need. So again, I would strongly recommend that they do some research into the various programs as much as they can. Just ask questions, get out there and find what you're looking for, and then that will kind of guide you in a certain direction.
And I actually do love that answer. I know a lot of people don't like it. They want giving the quick list. You know, you make it black and white, but you know, searching for colleges is a lot like relationships, right? You need to make sure it blends and work together, and there's no one set piece or variable out there. So if I'm like looking at a college like Jana University, what do I search? So, right, because we've actually, you know, is it Learning Differences Center? Is it Learning Disability? What should, you know, because there's so many different names out there being used right now.
Yes. So what I usually do is I go to the university homepage, and then there's always a section for academics in their drop-down menu, and then there's always a place where they have their resources listed, and it'll usually say resources or support, something along those lines. But what I tell kids is it should be relatively easy to find if they're kind of hiding it in their website, and then when you go to open it, there's hardly any information. That's probably not a great sign. But it should be pretty easy to find if you just go into the academic section of their website and you look at where they have their academic resources. You should find it there.
And so that students can get prepared, because a lot of them, you know, I think parents or guardians get surprised that, oh, I don't have to show any documentation beforehand. They need to show documentation after they get admitted and then sign up for the program. So what do they need? Like, is there a certain year that their assessment should be done? What should they do? Because, like you said earlier, getting assessed that you have a learning difference is not inexpensive.
No, it definitely isn't. But if you are hoping to have services when you're in college, you need to make sure you have an evaluation that is done from the age of 16 or older. The reason for that is because your brain just does such a dramatic amount of changing or changes during that time period, during your adolescent years. And so at the age of 16, the psychologists who do the testing, they use different test batteries that are made for a more, quote-unquote, adult brain. And so basically anything, once you get to be 17 or 18 years old, any testing you had from before then, like 14 years old, 10 years old, all of that is considered invalid. So you need to get an assessment from 16 or older. So I have a lot of students who will come to me as a freshman, and the parents will say, you know, he hasn't been evaluated since he was 10. Should we have this redone now? It's been 4 years. And I will tell them just to wait a couple of years instead of, unless they really want to get him tested twice, if they have the money for that. But other than that, I'll just have them wait 2 years so that they're ready with that assessment for college and beyond.
And there's a lot of talk about learning differences in education, but that brain keeps on developing and changing even after you graduate from college, right? Like till about 25. And, you know, and but there's no real conversation. How should someone reevaluate themselves? I know, just being around the block for so many years, I've seen some adults struggle because that guidance is disappeared. So what is some tips that you have as one leaves the college world into the adult world of how to reassess of, okay, these are now my weaknesses. These are my strengths. This is what I should focus on, and this is what I don't need to focus on anymore.
Right, right. So the interesting thing is once you leave college and you're ready to find a job, you are still protected under some of those federal laws. So again, knowing what your rights are in the job world is also really important. So for example, let's say you can't be discriminated against, first of all. So if you're in a job interview and you disclose that you have dyslexia and then you find out later from the employer that that's, you know, not something that they quote unquote want, that would be illegal. They can't discriminate or not provide you with a job because of a disability. And if you, let's say you get the job and you're so excited, but you go into work and you realize that, you know, you knew ahead of time, but you're kind of starting to see how much is required in terms of writing and sending polished emails, and you're just nervous because your dyslexia causes you to make tons of spelling errors, right? The job would have to help you figure out a solution to that. So it could be installing some sort of software on your computer that proofreads. I've seen other adults use software that they can speak into, and then the computer types the emails, or they can assign a colleague to help proofread important messages before they go out. So again, those rights continue into the working world, and I don't want anyone to think that they're limited on what job they want because of their learning difference. But they can do it. They just have to be ready to advocate for themselves and ask for what it is that they need. And they can get reevaluated after college too. If they want to do another assessment to see kind of where their brain is at, there are tons of psychologists out there who test adults.
Oh, I know. And now it's a lot, I think, some people are doing it online. I mean, whether it's, right? Yeah, it's just like you were talking about earlier. And I really appreciate that you mentioned that, because even as maybe how small your learning difference is, right? Like just saying like, you know, hold off. I'm a visual learner. I need to see this, right? You know, you don't hear, you're starting to hear people at the workplace. And also because I do have an adult son, you know, it helped where he had a resume full of experiences. And then when he got his first real serious job outside of high school, he let his employer know. He chose to know. And guess what? They have an incentive program, you know, with the government.
Wonderful.
They signed up, and it became more of a cooperation of understanding and stuff like that. So, and because he walked in there understanding his rights. You can't discriminate against me, right? And that's why I was telling people, no politics, whether you like it or not, because they're so important. Now, we began this podcast talking about, you know, self-advocacy, taking care of yourself, owning all of who you are and loving yourself, all of it. Mm-hmm. Any last words of wisdom for whether it's a parent, a guardian, a sibling, you know, that wonderful student that they need to kind of remind themselves as they're going through this journey in life?
Yeah, I think it's really important to remember that your child, your sister, your brother, they are not their disability. Their disability is just a part of who they are. I think a lot of times people tend to see that piece of them as being magnified or the biggest part of them or who they are because they worry, right? But making sure that you are talking to them about other things and making other things important. People tend to get hyper-focused on school when kids have a learning disability. So just making sure that you are coming into contact with all the parts of the person that you love, right? So if they're an athlete, talking to them about their athletics. If they're an artist, talking to them about their art. If they are a social butterfly, talking to them about the friends that they've made, just so that you are honoring all parts of your wonderful family member.
Amen to that. Yes, you are more than just one thing. John, I am so lucky and privileged to have the opportunity not only for this podcast, but to be working with you because I know all our students are really in good hands. And hopefully this will help other students and families out there as well. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
To College for All, where nothing is impossible unless you think it is impossible. This is ANV bringing you information about college and beyond. You can also follow us on social media at college4allANV on Twitter and Instagram.